This is From Cincinnati. Join in as we chat with people who have Cincinnati chili in their DNA, whether they live here now, grew up here, or made the Queen City their hometown, as they share their stories and the remarkable ways they are impacting the world. Everybody has a story, but not everyone is from Cincinnati.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of From Cincinnati. I'm Joe Wessels. On this week's show is Katie Lauer. Now, many people remember Katie Lauer as the lead singer and frontwoman of the Katie Lauer Band, a local bluegrass sensation that has been performing in Cincinnati and all around the South for decades. People will also remember her as the host on WNKU Sunday evenings and as a writer for City Beat and Cincinnati Magazine, where she has shared amazing stories for decades as well. Katie is considered the queen of bluegrass by many, maybe one of two possible women who were the first to front a bluegrass band anywhere in the country, or anywhere in the world for that matter. And in 2005, the Bluegrass Hall of Fame in Owensboro, Kentucky, honored her as one of the pioneering women of bluegrass music. Now, Katie isn't exactly from Cincinnati, but she's been here for decades. She came here via the South, namely Huntsville, Alabama, though she was born in Tennessee, and she'll talk all about that and what brought her here to Cincinnati and what got her inspired to become a musician here, and really one of the best known musicians in this whole entire area. As anybody would expect with Katie Lauer, it's a great conversation with some great stories and lots of funniness built right in. Be sure to visit FromCincinnati.com, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter at FromCincinnati, and we're also on Instagram. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and leave us a rating so others can find out about the show. It does really help us tremendously. We're also now on the iHeartRadio app, along with the Pandora app and lots of other places, and you can, of course, just always ask your smart speaker to play From Cincinnati. Music in today's show is courtesy of Jake Speed and the Freddies with a very special song you'll hear here in just a second. And of course, we play some music from the one and only Katie Lauer herself and the Katie Lauer Band. So thank you very much to Katie and the Katie Lauer Band for allowing us to use music in today's show. And with no further ado, let's start our conversation with the one and only Katie Lauer.
Along my canoe. I've rambled and roamed, but I'm heading back home. River and you, the Ohio River and you. I recall Coney Island days with you. At night we'd listen to Katie Lauer sing them deep Ellum blues. Take me back, take me back, River Marie, blow me back. Where I've rambled, I've roamed, but I'm heading back home to the Ohio River and you, the Ohio River and you.
Where to start?
On a dark and stormy night in January.
In January, you were born? Is that, was it, yeah, a stormy night?
Yeah, it's a dark and stormy night.
Where was that?
In Paris, Tennessee.
You're born in Tennessee. I thought you were down in southern Kentucky, but
I was right on the border of Kentucky.
Whereabouts?
Middle Tennessee.
Middle Tennessee, okay.
Where the lake is, where the lakes are.
Oh, okay. Somerset, and that area? Or is that?
No, I was born near Murray, Kentucky.
Okay.
Right on the line across from Murray, where my dad went to college.
Okay.
At Murray State. And I remember my Aunt Dot always said it was the coldest night of the year.
Oh, really?
When I was born. And I think of that every year because it always seems to fall on the coldest night of the year.
That when your birthday every year.
Right.
Gotcha. So your parents, you grew up with your mom and dad. What did your dad went to Murray State. What did he study there?
Business administration. He studied on the GI Bill after the war.
Okay.
After World War, the big one.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
World War II.
Right.
And he didn't finish, but he and my uncle, his brother, mm-hmm. and all of our families immigrated to Detroit.
Oh, really?
To work in the automobile factories.
So he got this business. He didn't finish his business degree then?
No.
But then he decided to take that and then go to Detroit and work in a factory. Who did he work for?
Well, he didn't work in – he worked as an accountant. He didn't really work as in a factory.
Okay.
He worked for Ford, I think, for Ford Chrysler.
Okay.
That's who he worked for.
Gotcha.
And then in 1959, he transferred to Alabama to work on the rocket program.
Oh, okay.
Redstone rocket program. And that's where we moved in 1959.
Was that for NASA? Because NASA has a presence in Alabama, pretty big one.
They do, and that's what the missile program was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't working for NASA. He was working for Chrysler. They were the contractors that were making the Redstone rocket.
So the Redstone rocket was a Chrysler rocket.
Right. It was a hoot in Alabama.
Yeah. So you, how old were you when you moved down there? Or how old were you when you left Kentucky then?
About five.
Oh, okay. Do you have many memories of that time?
A few, but not many.
Okay.
I think you kind of shut off your memory machine at a certain age.
Uh-huh.
And shut it back on.
Uh-huh.
But Huntsville, I have a lot of memories of.
Okay, you're in Huntsville.
Huntsville, Alabama.
Yep.
Every time they would set off a rocket test,
mm-hmm.
All the shelves would vibrate, the glass would break. It was wild just in the house.
How often that happened?
Oh, about once a month.
Really?
Yeah.
They so
test those missiles, and it was loud.
Huh.
And if you say when the first one, the Sputnik, went up, the one after Russia.
Right.
Everybody danced in the streets for the whole night. Nobody went to school the next day.
Really?
Or went to work.
So they had the one after Sputnik.
Yeah.
Which was what? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
I don't either. But that was it wasn't too long after Sputnik.
I remember Sputnik better.
Yeah.
But
because they beat us to it.
Right, yeah. And it was such a familiar name that it kind of became the name of the whole program.
Hmm. Interesting. It's funny that we can't remember that. But so you have more memories. Did you graduate from high school in Huntsville then?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
And I started to college at the University of Missouri.
Hmm. Why there?
At a good journalism school, and I was interested in being a writer.
Really? Okay. I didn't realize you actually had a journalism background.
Yeah, I do.
No kidding. So you got a degree from there in journalism?
No, I didn't finish.
You didn't. That's kind of family tradition, I guess. Not to finish. Gotcha.
Start something and let it go.
Right.
But
you learned enough to do some writing, though, I guess, huh?
Yeah. Well, I was really advanced in my verbal abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And they put me in advanced classes
mm-hmm.
of writing where I was maybe there'd be six students or something.
This is at Missouri?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so I got
a lot
of attention.
Is this the one they call Mizzou?
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I got a lot of attention for my writing.
Who were you writing for then? For the school paper or
no,
just professors?
No, just for my professors.
Okay.
They were teaching me how to write.
Hmm.
And you could say that I already knew how to write, but I didn't really.
Mm-hmm.
I needed the discipline and the ability to edit and cut and paste, you might say.
Uh-huh.
So then I married and moved to Cincinnati.
That's how you got to Cincinnati. You married somebody from here then or somebody who got
no,
a job?
Somebody I met in Huntsville.
Okay.
But he worked for General Electric.
Oh, okay.
And so he had to transfer here and he brought me with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I just came into kind of virgin territory.
Mm-hmm. How old were you then?
I must have been in my 20s.
Did you get married here?
Yeah.
You got married in Cincinnati?
In Covington.
Oh, in Covington. Okay.
Yeah, by justice of the peace.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And you were in your 20s then?
Yeah, 23.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Huh. And what happened to him?
Well, the last I heard, he was in Schenectady, New York, and was going to live in Europe.
Huh.
So I don't know what happened to him.
Did you? You obviously didn't work out.
Oh, right. No, we stayed married 9 or 10 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No kids?
No.
No, never had any children?
No.
No? And then, you know, I guess you guys stayed friendly or didn't?
No, we didn't even stay. I stayed friendly, but he didn't stay friendly.
Gotcha.
It's so, kind of hard to do if there's just one of you.
Yeah, gotcha.
But then it was those years where I was just treading water after the divorce and after married life. I entertained my husband's friends from time to time, and he got me to cook dinner for them one night. And I was trying to cook some Southern things, like mashed potatoes. And I got the potatoes in the pan, got them boiling, and I got them ready to bring out and plate, as the French would say.
Yeah.
And I dropped them on the floor.
Oh, jeez.
And nobody was looking, so I picked them up and put them back in the pot. But there was somebody looking.
Uh-huh.
A man saw it, one of the guests.
Uh-huh.
So I was ruined.
Oh, jeez.
I was ruined.
You couldn't serve those mashed potatoes.
No.
No.
No, couldn't do that. And that's one of the things I remember about being a young bride.
And that was here in Cincinnati. Huh?
Yeah.
So – I mean, there's a million questions you could start there. What were you doing then? Were you just being a stay-at-home wife, or were you trying to work?
I was working at General Electric.
You were all with him?
Yeah, but not with him. No, not in the same department. I was working for the Air Force as a secretary.
Uh-huh.
Not really a secretary, a clerk steno.
Okay.
And I wasn't even very good at that, and was always hanging up bits of poetry by the coffee pot.
Uh-huh.
I always had a poem for the day.
That you wrote?
No.
No, no. Okay.
That I got out of a book.
Okay.
But I thought that it would enrich everybody's life.
So about what year was this?
Oh, this was in the 60s.
Okay.
And I chose good poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I had that going for me. But I was not meant to be in the stenographic field.
Uh-huh.
So that ended. Well, it didn't end until I discovered music.
Uh-huh.
And when I discovered music, I was no good for anything else at all.
So let's talk about that. So how did you discover the music? So I was thinking that was something. I just came here with this preconceived notion that you were going to tell me you started playing music when you were 3 years old. And
well, I did.
Okay.
We played piano and had piano lessons all the way through school.
Uh-huh.
And I had guitar lessons.
So you have any siblings?
Yeah, sister.
You just one sister?
Dead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was she musical as well?
Oh, very.
Okay.
And the two of us sang together.
Really?
Sang in church.
As young girls?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And we just did that all our lives. We didn't know people didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just about all of our waking hours were spent consumed with music.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a good way to grow up.
Yeah. What kind of music?
All kinds. We sang Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff, choral music.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that you can think of, we did. Mm-hmm. Country music.
Where did the bluegrass come in?
Well, that wasn't until I got to Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, after my separation, I was walking down Main Street one night.
Like downtown?
Down in, over the Rhine.
And over the Rhine, okay.
And boy, it was a place that nobody went.
Mm-hmm.
It was just vacant is the word I'm looking for, I think. Mm. But
pretty much every, by that point, everybody had already vacated over the Rhine to the burbs. And
oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But it's one place. There would be a line around the block.
The Maud's?
To get in. No, it was at Aunt Maudie's.
Aunt Maudie's. Okay, that's right. Not Maud's. It's Aunt Maudie's. Okay.
Yeah. And I heard the banjo player kicking off Salty Dog Blues,
mm-hmm.
and it just made me crazy.
Mm.
I had to go in. I had no control over anything. I just loved it instantly. And I had heard bluegrass.
Do you play the banjo?
No, I play guitar.
Okay.
No, I don't play banjo.
What instruments do you play?
Guitar, piano a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And actually, I've gotten pretty stiff in my hands.
Okay.
And can't play anything too much.
Oh, really? But you could sing.
Yeah, I still sing, and I still write.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what age is left for me.
Do you go in? Do you know who that banjo player was?
Yeah, it was Vernon McIntyre.
Should I know that person? Is that?
No, you shouldn't. You wouldn't know him. Mm-hmm. But it was Jim McCall and Vernon McIntyre and the Appalachian Grass. And I went in and sat down and stayed there from that night and the next weekend and the next weekend. And pretty soon I got to sing in harmony with the band.
Oh, really? So this is post-marriage?
Post-marriage, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Marriage wouldn't have made any difference, though.
Mm. It just grabbed you.
Yeah, it did. It was like a major thing.
Mm-hmm. So you got to know Mr. McIntyre and
right, and I began singing on the breaks with them, and then pretty soon they were asking me to get up on stage and sing with them.
Uh huh.
And then
were they bluegrass?
Yeah, they were bluegrass.
Straight
bluegrass.
Mm-hmm.
And then a guy came in one night and said he would give them a 5-night-a-week job in Clifton if they would bring the girl.
And you were the girl.
And I was the girl. I was the chick singer. And so they did. They moved there. No, it's not still there.
Okay.
The real estate's still there, but
okay. It's
something else.
So what was the name of it then? What was the name of your band? Or did it have
Vernon
a name?
Vernon McIntyre and Jim McCall and the Appalachian Grass.
Uh-huh.
They didn't put me on the marquee.
Oh, they didn't?
No.
How long did you stick around for that then?
Not long. We're talking about maybe 1972.
Okay.
And I stayed a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Are you still working at GE during this time?
No.
Okay.
No, I left that.
Okay. So what were you doing to make money then during that time? Were you performing?
Well, I was getting paid to do that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
That was your living? That was how you... Okay.
Not a very good living, I must say.
Uh-huh. But you're doing what you love.
Yeah, I was doing what I love. And there was a lot of drama and ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
But I did love it. And I started my own band then. I quit and went through another fallow period where I wasn't doing anything. And then I just one day started my own band, and everything happened. And that was 1975.
And what band was that?
The Katie Lauer Band.
Oh, your name was, you'd be damn sure your band name was on at that time, right?
Yeah, it was.
So 1975, you started the Katie Lauer Band. And how many people were in that band?
There were five.
So you got to know some people in the local bluegrass community. Was there a pretty strong bluegrass community then? Or?
Yes, there was.
Mm-hmm. Is there now?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
There's a strong bluegrass community, but I don't know where they are.
Okay.
I know they're out there.
I mean, there's like, I think of the Comet All-Stars.
Right.
And I can't think of that gentleman's name, too, but he worked
Eddie
for the
Cunningham.
Yeah, worked for the city. Or still does. I mean, I think he's retired, I heard now. I don't know him well, but I knew him actually because I was a city reporter covering the city hall, and I knew him as a city reporter. And one day I went to the Comet and saw them, and I went, wait, That's the same guy.
He's very, very good.
Oh, he's very. Oh, those guys are amazing. I'm sure you've seen him probably more than a few times. Huh?
Well, the banjo player started off with the Katie Lauer Band.
Okay.
And the mandolin player moved to California, and the bass player moved to California as part of a cult.
Oh, and God.
Why didn't you tell me?
Like Kool-Aid drinking type cult?
Well, he said it wasn't that bad, but.
But a cult's a cult.
Yeah, a cult. And
he probably didn't call it a cult. They don't usually call themselves cult and that they're in a cult, right?
Well, he told me once when we were getting together after we'd all broken up, he told me that he'd been in a cult.
Oh, really?
And
said it just like that. I was in a cult. Okay.
The reason that I left Cincinnati in such haste was I was in a cult.
Uh-huh.
And I said, wow, a cult. Why didn't you tell me? And he said, well, Katie, because it was a cult.
And you don't get a patch on your shirt that says,
no,
I'm in a cult or something.
I'm in a cult. No. So
you have five people in the band. Do you know who you said a couple of them. Do you know who else was in the band then?
That's engraved on my heart.
Okay.
It was Jeff Roberts on banjo.
Uh-huh.
Jeff Terflinger on mandolin. Buddy Griffin on fiddle.
Uh-huh.
Rich Flagg on bass and in the cult.
Uh-huh.
And me on guitar.
Uh-huh. And you were fronting the band?
Yeah.
So you were, what I understand about you is you were fronting a bluegrass band, and you were one of the first women in the country to do that?
Yes, I was.
And that was, that kind of, maybe not only because of the quality of the music, but also because of that fact there, you gained some notoriety, right?
Yeah, I did. I was real good, you know, back then.
I like you can say that. Some people just kind of say, well, I was all right. But you were like, you were good, and you're comfortable saying that.
Yeah, because I have a good antenna for those kind of things.
Uh-huh.
And besides, it's over now.
Gotcha. How long did it go?
Gosh, for years.
Like decades or?
Well, the band was fluid. Sometimes Jeff would be available.
Okay.
And other times he wouldn't, and I'd have to get another banjo player.
Uh-huh.
Once I got Bela Fleck to sub for Jeff. I don't know if you know Bela Fleck.
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know.
He's a real avant-garde banjo player.
Okay.
In the national scene. All the people we hung around with in those days achieved some notoriety.
Mm-hmm.
And who was the first woman in bluegrass to front a band was a toss-up between me and a woman named Betty Fisher. And we don't know when she started.
Huh.
So it's a toss-up. But that's why I'm in the Hall of Fame and stuff like that.
Where's the Hall of Fame?
Down in Owensboro.
Oh, really? That's kind of where bluegrass sort of got its start?
Well, it's across the street from Bill Monroe's home place.
Okay.
I guess it's across the street from Rosine.
Okay. Did you make records?
Yeah.
How many records did you make?
That band made 3 records.
Uh-huh.
And then we made a fourth record in Over the Rhine, and it was that band plus some strays that were brought. Well, Karen and Linford Detweiler and
from Over the Rhine, the
right.
Band. Oh, okay, you know them as well too. They're amazing.
Yeah,
but they're not really. I wouldn't consider that music bluegrass.
No, though. It's not bluegrass.
Okay,
but I just wanted to do an album that would encompass the Over the Rhine artists.
Mm-hmm.
And see what came out.
Uh-huh.
And it was a good album. It was a real good album.
Uh-huh.
And then I did one.
Can you still get those anywhere?
Yeah, I'll give you one.
Oh, okay. Okay. Can you get them on like any kind of like nowadays, you know, all the cool kids are doing Apple Music and Spotify. And did anybody ever put that stuff out there?
Yeah. You run out of records and you can't sell them.
Uh-huh.
Like on CD Baby.
Yeah.
And you've got to have all kinds of licenses
okay.
and things to be legal.
Oh, and you don't have those?
Not everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. You have to go back and get everybody to, because I guess at the time you didn't know there was going to be digital downloads and all that kind of stuff.
No, we didn't know any of that.
So you have to go back. So now I guess if you do a record contract, you probably sign your whole life away pretty much.
Right.
Any future medium that ever might come along.
Yeah. We're thinking about doing another album.
Oh, really?
A tribute to the Carter family.
Oh, my gosh. That
Buddy
would be amazing.
I talked about it last night.
I love me some Carter family, June Carter Cash and Johnny Cash. And
yeah.
Did you know them? Did you ever know
them?
Did you really?
I didn't know Johnny Cash, but I met June.
Really?
And
that woman must have been a saint to put up with him.
She was a sweet woman.
Was she really?
She
came
to
what a loss, both of them, but yeah.
She came to a show we did and introduced herself.
Did she really?
Yeah.
Must have been an honor to
for her
to come up and introduce herself to you. Like, hey, I just listened to your music and I still want to talk to you. I want to talk to you.
Well, the albums that we made were vinyl.
Yeah.
It weren't CDs.
Uh-huh.
The last album that I mentioned is on CD.
Okay.
And I have that. And if we make another album on the Carter family, God knows what that'll be on.
Yeah.
MP3 or something.
I don't know. Yeah, I know nothing about that. I know how to listen to it, but I don't know how to anything. This is about as far as I go as recording this kind of stuff as I know about.
Yeah.
What are the chances of you doing another album? Do you think it's?
I'd really like to do it.
So high probability, you think?
Yeah, there's a high probability that we'd do it.
You get the old, so it was you, were you the only woman in the Katie Lauer band, right?
Right, and we'd get the old band together to do it.
They're all still around? And
two of them are in California.
Uh-huh.
And they flew in for my birthday.
Okay.
This year.
Oh, really?
So they're available.
So you're still friends and everything with those
guys?
Oh,
yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah, we're
sounds
real
like it was
close.
A really positive experience.
It was.
Because like, you hear so much about bands where they fight over who's getting the credit and everything else. And
well,
I don't know if that gets like higher level stuff, but or you know, if you get to be, you know, I don't know, Metallica or something like that. And you start, not that they're a bluegrass band, but.
Well, we didn't drink or do drugs.
Yeah.
Particularly.
Was that a rule or was that just something that didn't happen?
Didn't happen.
Uh-huh.
We had a lot of fun doing what we did.
Uh-huh.
And there were no drinkers and absolutely no drinking.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of a rule. Yeah. But I got people who didn't drink anyway. Then we started doing gigs like we went to the Philadelphia Folk Festival. We went to Garrison Keillor's Ferry Home Companion.
Up in Minneapolis?
Yeah, we did several.
Really? How'd that happen?
Well, he just called us.
Really?
Out of the clear blue.
Where did he hear of you?
Garrison had a radio show
mm-hmm.
that he played albums on.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He came up with one of ours and liked the band and wanted us to come out and play. And he arranged a tour. So that you could go in the radio show and do this little coffee house
mm-hmm.
the night before.
Oh.
And you could do a gig maybe in Wisconsin, Madison.
Okay.
I seem to remember Madison.
So all five of you went up there?
Yeah, we went to Chicago, Madison, and a bunch of places.
Uh-huh.
And we'd always end up in Iowa City. Which was a good gig, but we had a great time at Prairie Home Companion.
So he was good to you?
Oh, he was good to us.
And it raised your profile quite a bit? Is that what? Is
yeah,
that,
it probably did. I never played.
Were you weren't concerned. It seems like you weren't worried about, you were playing the music.
I didn't worry much about the other stuff.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why I didn't, but I guess
do you regret that?
I wish I had been a little more proactive. It was hard enough just to manage the band
uh-huh.
and get all the paperwork done, and it was all up to me, pretty much. Now, when Rich went to California and Larry Nager joined the band as bass player,
Larry Nager, who worked for the Inquirer later?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
he did. I knew Larry. I didn't know he did that. Okay.
Yeah. He did a lot of the paperwork and stuff for years.
Huh.
And then he went with Red Allen.
Mm-hmm.
And we got another bass player, and I can't remember who it was. Yeah, I can't remember even a face or form. I just know somebody had to have filled in
mm-hmm.
with us on bass, and I don't remember who.
And that's what Larry did, is he played bass?
Yeah, and he played mandolin and guitar.
I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah,
I was just a little musician. Cub. I guess maybe I feel like I may have heard that at some point. I don't remember associating him with you in my mind, but it's just a little cub guy at the Inquirer. He was always very nice to me.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happened to him. Wasn't he at the Post first and then he went to
He was at the Post first.
And he jumped over. I do remember that.
He became the entertainment editor.
Yep.
For the Inquirer, which was a big job.
Uh-huh. Is that Janis Joplin behind you on the?
Yeah.
You're a fan of Janis Joplin?
Yeah. She had a birthday close to mine.
Oh, really? She was quite talented, too.
She was super.
Yeah. Tragic.
Talented.
Yeah.
It was super tragic. Strolls down memory lane are kind of exhausting.
Yeah. Emotionally or?
Both.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel, I mean, as you sit here, do you look back at your life, are you happy with how it all went? Or do you just, you said you wish you would have been more proactive, and I don't know what you meant by.
Well, I wish I had done more things to promote the band.
Okay.
Or to take advantage of, we got great gigs.
Mm-hmm.
We had good luck. Larry was a great booking agent.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got in that green van, Ford Econoline van, and went every place we wanted to go. We went to Alice Lloyd College in Kentucky. Have you ever heard of that?
Can't say that I have.
Well, it was a little bitty tiny college community, and we played a concert for them. And the girls, it was a girls' college.
Mm-hmm.
Came out to the van and carried my guitar and brought me flowers. And you could go in the dormitories, and there'd be girls with their hair in curlers,
mm-hmm.
just like any dorm.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And I have little memories like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's always memories of what's going on underneath that.
Mm-hmm.
How were we getting along at that time?
Mm-hmm.
But we were.
Mm-hmm.
We did pretty well getting along. We played in New York City a bunch of times. Somebody has an issue of Rolling Stone where we were on a bill with Bill Monroe.
And who's Bill Monroe?
He's the father of bluegrass music.
Oh, look at me. Okay.
Mandolin player.
Okay.
Blue Moon of Kentucky.
Okay.
Well, after the bluegrass band years were kind of drawing to a close, I went to Russia as part of Cincinnati delegation to the sister city.
Oh, okay.
That was fun to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to go, but once I got there, I had a great time.
Neat.
Bobby Stern was there.
Oh, yeah.
And she was dressed every morning by sunrise.
Oh, really?
In the gloves and the handbag. She was mayor at the time.
Oh, was she? Okay.
Yeah. Jim Tarbell was on that trip.
He wasn't on council then, was he?
No.
No? Okay.
He was a restaurateur.
Yeah.
Still owned Arnold's.
Right.
Then.
You've known Jim a long time, I imagine.
Yeah. There's a neat picture of him on a poster in there.
Oh, is there?
Most people don't recognize him.
Would he have hair?
Yeah, he had long hair.
Long hair, red hair too, right?
Yeah.
I never knew him with it. I've seen pictures of him though. So what you started writing songs? Did you I was gonna say, was the Katie Lauer Band original music, cover music, both?
Both.
Uh-huh.
I wrote some songs. One of my songs ended up on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, really? How'd that happen?
It was the only thing I ever did that made any money. How it happened, I can only guess. Because I don't know. At that time, Lou Uchelson, who is my record producer, was having things played in New York on radio stations there. And, you know, it could be that somebody heard it like G.E. Smith and brought it in to them. It played a lot, and that was a worthwhile thing.
What song was that?
It was called He Made a Woman Out of Me.
Okay.
They never sang it. They only played the melody.
What, on Saturday Night Live, the band did? Okay.
It was an outro. That happened.
Did you know that was going to happen before?
No.
So how did you find out?
Finally, somebody at BMI, Broadcast Music, got a hold of me. It had already been playing.
And said, we owe you some money or something?
Yeah.
Really?
Exactly.
No kidding.
It was a thrill.
Oh, I bet. So because of that, was that your biggest song then that you ever had?
Yeah.
Because it got played on the outro, did people find it other places in or?
No, I didn't get any credit for it.
Oh, they didn't credit you?
No, they didn't credit me.
Huh.
For the music. So I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine.
So how does they determine how much money you get paid then? Does it just?
You get so much of play.
Okay.
And it
depends
was,
on the audience size and everything.
Right. It's a national show.
On a popular show.
And a popular show. They would add up all the money they owed you and send you a check quarterly. And that was really nice to get.
Well, so what year was that, you think?
That was, it had to have been around 1975.
Oh, right when they started.
Right. I know I moved then, so it couldn't have been exactly 1975, maybe that I heard about it. I can't, it's foggy. But I had a lot of things handed to me that I didn't follow up on or, you know, do anything about. When Larry came, he did more of that kind of thing.
So how did you find Larry then?
Larry, we advertised. Where did we find him? We advertised for a bass player.
Mm-hmm.
We had auditions. And Larry came down from Columbus. He'd been with the Red Mountain String Band.
Okay. Is he from there then? Or?
He's from New York, but he went to school in Columbus. Had a degree in anthropology. So he really loved old-time music and bluegrass. Yeah, he came down and auditioned. He had hair all the way down his back. Just a mop of curly hair and a beard.
Did that bother you?
Yeah, I made him get it cut off.
Really?
I took him to the barber shop for his first haircut in years. It didn't bother me, no.
But you're trying to go for a look for the band or something?
Well, no, I was trying to not get us killed.
Oh, okay.
If you go down to Prestonsburg, Kentucky, or some of those places.
One of them long hairs, right?
They would have had plenty to say.
Oh, I see. Oh, really? Huh.
Really?
Because they called them, they were the long hairs, right? They were the hippies. They were
the long hairs.
Yeah, all this stuff that goes along with that. Interesting. So then, did he then got a job at the Inquirer later on? Then he didn't come here to be a journalist. He got the job. Okay, I see.
No.
How long was he with Katie Lauer Band then?
Years.
Really?
But I can't remember how long.
Is he still? You still talk to him?
Yeah, he's in. Living in Hawaii now.
Is he really? There's a lot of expat Cincinnati folks living in Hawaii, I keep hearing.
I don't know the name of the island he's on.
Yeah.
But it's one where there's a lot of music.
Okay, so he's still doing music stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, he was music through and through, it sounds like.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah. Was there ever a time where you got and offered a big record contract, or was that ever even a possibility?
Never, it never came about.
Where would you have to go? To like Nashville or something?
Nashville.
Like that? That's where you'd have to go. And you never
There's
thought
so
about that?
There's so many good singers in Nashville. It's not even funny. I was good, but I probably wasn't confident enough to have taken that kind of abuse if I didn't make it. It would have been rough.
Mm-hmm. And it never even thought, like, maybe we should do that? Or you just think, or did you?
I didn't think much about it, no.
No?
I was pleased with what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
We did a lot of things that were pretty, I mean, we toured.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't just stay in Cincinnati and play.
Right. We talked about that. You mentioned the Philadelphia Folk Festival.
Right.
You kind of mentioned it. What was significant about that?
It was the most organized event that I've ever been part of.
Mm-hmm.
Each musician had two volunteers who would get some Cokes or or whatever, take them through the lines to get backstage, which was, man, that was, it was big time stuff. The stage backstage area would be just huge, and a lot of photographers popping flash bulbs at you. So you'd get up on stage. We opened for, no, we didn't open. He opened for us. The banjo player, bet you're going fishing all of the time. I'm a going fishing too. Don't, you never heard of him?
I don't think so.
Well, he was a really popular act.
Okay.
At the time. And we met all these musicians from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
They came from, fiddlers came from Ireland, Scotland. There were bands from Eastern Europe. It was really a class affair. And we did that. And
so what was the impact of that? Like when you went and all those people were there, did people see you? And then that allowed They bought records. Okay.
The end game of that was that you sold records after your performance.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could sell $300 or $400 worth, that was a nice take. That means you were doing pretty well.
And did you?
Yeah, we did.
Uh-huh.
We
did. So would you stand there and like sell them and autograph them and all that kind
of
stuff? Really?
Yeah, you had to go through all that.
Uh-huh. Did you enjoy that, meeting the fans and that kind of stuff?
How can I answer that? I did somewhat, but I got tired of it too. Tired of...
You were truly just in it for the music, right?
I was.
It wasn't about... I mean, is it... Did you get that rush of being on stage? Because I did like a little stand-up comedy 10 years ago. And I was okay, I guess. I don't know. It depends on who you ask. But I love that rush of just being on stage and getting, hearing people laughing and then that applause. And it was so, it was like, I never even experienced anything like that before. Did you?
Yeah, there was that rush.
Yeah.
Of when the music was good.
Yeah.
There was a real rush. And, you know, periodically a sound man somewhere will find us a tape of our performance at their event.
Uh-huh.
At their festival or event. And we've come across some tapes of things we played at that were just excellent. We did okay. Nothing lasts forever, and we got tired of each other, I expect. Although, like you said, we are still friends.
That's great.
Yeah. You get Christmas cards from each other, and Rich, the one who was in the cult, every now and then he sends me a takeout dinner to Panera or someplace.
Uh-huh.
He computes it all.
Uh-huh.
I was amazed that he could do that.
Uh-huh. Which just shows up at your door?
Yeah.
Oh, really? He calls you in advance and tells you it's coming.
Yeah.
You don't just all of a sudden some guy stand there with a bag full of food.
No, but I mean, how clever to be able to do that from California.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I just can't imagine it.
That's amazing, yeah.
But all of a sudden, delivery has exploded.
Right, right.
Anything you can deliver,
you can get
it. It's hot.
Yeah. So then, what have you been doing lately? Then, so how, and you've done that. You've written for Cincinnati Magazine. We haven't talked about that at all. And that is something that I think I first knew you from that because I've just got the journalism side of me, and just reading your stories. And that, where did that kind of all start?
Well, I started that in about 1977.
Oh, really? So I found about it much later, I guess.
Yeah. But. And I just started writing.
So who was that, pre-Laura Palfer or is?
Well, I started writing for Ohio Magazine.
Okay.
Was
Laura there too?
No.
No.
And
that was owned by Larry Flint at one time, wasn't it?
Ohio Magazine?
Yeah.
Maybe it was.
I think it was. Okay. You don't know Larry. It doesn't sound like.
No, I don't know Larry. I just would write about the festivals and stories that we encountered.
Mm-hmm.
And we encountered plenty of interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kept selling the stories. And it was good extra income.
Yeah.
I got asked to have a column in Cincinnati Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun. But then they bought out the magazine,
mm-hmm.
and they don't have any of the old people in it anymore.
Right.
Which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good magazine. So what I've been doing lately is I've written 3 stories just for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking that I might make it into a book.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If I can go without trying to sell those stories, because if you want to write a book, I think you have to have fresh stuff,
mm-hmm.
not just old.
Depends on what kind of book it is, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there are people that have recycled old columns. Do you own all your old columns and everything?
As far as I know, I do.
Do you still have them? You must have them somewhere then, right?
Well, I've got thumb drives and things, but no, I don't have them all. But luckily for me, City Beat is who I went to after Ohio Magazine.
Okay.
And they keep archives of my stuff.
Yeah.
And so does Cincinnati Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know about Ohio, but that was when I met John Baskin,
mm-hmm.
who was a really phenomenal writer, and he kind of took me under his wing and taught me some more stuff that I needed as a refresher from the University of Missouri.
Uh-huh.
So there were 2 sides to me. And then in the whole scheme of things, I ran off with jazz players
mm-hmm.
and started singing jazz, did a jazz album. When I look back over my life, I want to go take a nap.
Because we haven't even talked about the radio show.
No, we haven't. The radio
27 and a half years you did that show on WNKU.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get the name of it wrong. It was
Music from the Hills of Home.
Music from the Hills of Home, right.
Right. And
was that a paid thing or did you?
Yeah, it was paid.
Oh, really? And you played bluegrass music and
whatever I felt like.
Whatever you felt like. And talk?
Yeah. Wayne was my partner.
Uh-huh.
And
did you guys always do it together?
Yeah,
we did. How did that start? How did you guys start doing a radio show?
The guy who had the bluegrass show on WNKU left. And they needed somebody to do a bluegrass
show.
And Sheila Rue, who was the manager of the station
mm-hmm.
at that time, asked me to do it. And she kind of really put a lot of pressure on me to do it.
Oh, really?
I said I couldn't do it. And she said I could do it. And so I started off with Buddy Griffin doing that show. And we did it for a few months.
3 hours.
Yeah. And then Wayne
every Sunday
came.
Night. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, we started off in Sunday afternoons.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah.
Because eventually, I think when I found out, it was in the evenings. And you did that live?
Completely by the skin of our teeth.
Did you bring in your own music and everything that you say?
No, they had a library, and we used that. And I had a kind of a tendency to wander from bluegrass
mm-hmm.
at times. Well, I was there, and Wayne Clyburn came and was my engineer
mm-hmm.
and my partner
mm-hmm.
for 27 years.
So eventually you must have come to like it at some point, right?
Oh, I did come to like it.
How long did that take?
It took a few months.
Mm-hmm.
Then
you started to look forward to it?
I don't think I ever looked forward to it. I wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to slack off.
Mm-hmm.
But it was hard. It was mm-hmm. hard work.
Yeah. People don't realize, they think it's just you just show up and sit down and talk into a microphone, but there's a lot more than that.
There's a lot more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember times when I had jobs, singing jobs,
mm-hmm.
and I would have to go to the radio station and do a show and then do the singing job.
After the show?
Yeah, I'd be tired, worn out, but you just do it. But I worked hard.
And it was fun, right? I mean, for the most part?
Oh, yeah. It was fun, especially after Wayne came. Wayne is still my ideal foil.
And was he a musician, too?
Wayne's a musician, banjo player. And then Wayne left. Oakley Scott came in, and he really was good. He was good at promotion, and he could just make he was an advertising kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got all that stuff down, and we had a good time. We'd still like to be on the radio. It's hard to find a radio station mm-hmm. that wants to devote 3 hours to bluegrass.
You ever look at WAIF?
Yeah, we did look at WAIF. They did not express any interest in us at all. Yeah,
that's amazing. But I have my own issues with that place.
It's a weird place.
It is a weird place, unfortunately.
I went over there to a board of directors meeting.
Uh-huh. I was on the board of directors for about 3 months, and I quit because I thought these people are not being very honest.
No, they weren't. They wanted to keep things as they were.
Yep.
Strictly.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't matter if you could raise money.
Right. Nope. Didn't matter. Yeah, that's a shame because I think that's a hugely underutilized resource in this community. But
well, it is.
Yeah. And boy, if you could go there now, you'd just be right up. Right up the street here, a couple miles away.
Yeah, it would be neat. But we offered to do it and got nothing in return. It would be fun to be back on the air. Who knows
mm-hmm.
what the future holds?
Who knows?
I'm probably not going to sit home and crochet.
No. There's more to come.
There's more to come.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
That's a good place to end it.
Well, thank you for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome.
I really appreciate it.
I enjoyed it.
I like hearing your story. I'd like to hear more of it, but we'll do that. Save that for another time then.
Yeah.
Thank you, Katie, for being on From Cincinnati. You're from Cincinnati. As we say, my tagline here is that, everybody has a story, but not everybody's from Cincinnati.
Right. Right.
Very good. Well, thanks, Katie. Appreciate it.
Uh-huh.
When you go down to Deep Ellum, your money in your shoes. Women in Deep Ellum got the Deep Ellum blues. Oh, sweet mama, daddy's got them Deep Ellum blues. Oh, sweet mama, daddy's got them Deep Ellum blues.
Thanks for listening to another edition of From Cincinnati. That was Katie Lauer. Thanks again to Katie so much for allowing us to have that conversation and for allowing us to use some of the music from the Katie Lauer Band on today's show. Be sure to check her out. You can find her music around a little harder to find, as she talks about a little bit in the show, but you can find it. It's definitely out there. There's digital downloads and whatnot out there with Katie's voice on it. She is quite the talent. So thanks a lot to Katie for being on the show today. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and leave us a rating so others can find out about the show. It really does help. From Cincinnati is back next week for another exciting conversation with someone interesting, because everybody has a story, but not everyone is from Cincinnati.
You've been listening to From Cincinnati. We're online at FromCincinnati.com or at From Cincinnati on Twitter. Search for our page on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and other social media. Send in your guest ideas. We'd love to hear who you want to hear on the show. You can also email us through our website or call 513-549-NEWS or send us a message on social media. Please rate and subscribe to our show in Apple Podcasts. Your ratings and reviews really do help others find the show. If Apple Podcasts isn't your thing, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, or we have been told if you hook up the internet to your old Crossley radio, you can find From Cincinnati there. You can even ask your smart speaker to play From Cincinnati. I'm Joanne Lichtenstein, not from Cincinnati, but my sister used to live there. I'm in beautiful Burbank, California, and the voice of From Cincinnati. You can find me and my voice over services at joevoices.com. From Cincinnati is a production of High Priority Partners, LLC, and is distributed through Loveland Local News. Copyright 2020. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next Monday and every Monday for a new chat with someone new, because everybody has a story, but not everyone is from Cincinnati.